Hello and welcome to Football Book Club, the only book club where, instead of literary classics, each week we read another footballer's autobiography. Less Nick Hornby, more Stiginka Bjornaby. Thank you. Follow the trawler on Twitter for that. Any more,
bloody
send them in.
Bloody hell, follow the trawler.
That is a good one.
It's good. I suppose there's a definition of what good means.
Outside
Jack.
The box.
We can't just roast our listeners all the time. It's a very good one.
It's good. It's good if that's what
no
you're going
gonna
for.
No one's
going to
send them in if you're just going to slag them off. Or maybe
no, they enjoy it. They like me being mean to them. They love it.
You pay good money for that, for Jack.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
Come to my Cameo. I'll.
I think you mean your OnlyFans, right?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. My OnlyFans.
I'm James Berg, and today we have a slightly different show to normal, Wider Reading, where we have a week off from reading a book for something a little bit special. It's basically our equivalent of an international break, but importantly, not shit. So today we're going to be chatting to a very special guest, the brilliant author, journalist, and star of Peter Crouch podcast and so many other podcasts.
Peter Crouch!
We Didn't Start the Fire. Joe, yeah, not Peter Crouch. Tom Fordyce is, of course, the person coming on, and he's not only a great writer in his own right, but he's written countless sports autobiographies with Jamie Redknapp, Crouchy, of course, Geraint Thomas, Chris Gayle, and many more. So there's a lot for us to ask him, and joining me to do so, as always, Jack Bernhardt and Natasha Daniels. How you doing, guys?
Hi, hello.
Good.
I'm excited that we haven't had to read anything this week.
Yeah, that is...
God, I hate reading.
A third through the series? How you found it so far, guys? Okay.
Luckily, I had my Botox topped up this week, so you can't tell what I'm actually...
God, it's a real Joan Rivers response. I love it. Yeah.
That really is. So the Nevilles will never be any the wiser what Tash thought of them.
Yeah.
Thank you, Botox. Are you excited to chat to Tom Fordyce today? It's going to be great, right?
Yes. I'm really excited. I'm a big fan.
Yes. Yeah,
he's a good writer.
I know. It's quite something.
I was thinking, it's going to be weird talking to someone who's written an actual football book and not the things that we find off the back of a lorry. And that's not to me. Some of those you read are great, but I think Tom will be a really, really great... I'm very excited to it. So let's get down to it. Here's what happened when Football Book Club met Tom Fordyce. We're joined by an extra special guest. He's the star of that Peter Crouch podcast. He's the former chief sports writer for the BBC, and he's written countless sports books on his own and with sports stars such as Jamie Redknapp, Chris Gayle, and Geraint Thomas. It's Tom Fordyce.
Woo! Nice to be here. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for joining us. How you doing?
I'm good. I'm very excited about this. I mean, look, I spend my life thinking about sports books, football books. So, you know, to chat with some other people who are doing the same thing.
Yeah.
It's quite the thrill.
First things first, so this isn't awkward. We definitely haven't said anything bad about any of your books on the show.
You sure? Right, all three of you, look me in the eye. Make a solemn oath.
We solemnly swear we never have nor shall read a Tom Fordyce book on the show unless...
Well, look, if I produce something absolutely rubbish, listen, pile in.
Yeah, I will not give you the same promise, because we are fair on this podcast.
Yeah, we're not going to go in for mean reasons. I mean, did you write Gary and Phil Neville's autobiography, for Club and Country?
No, I did not.
Okay, then you're probably okay.
But some of the books we read are good. Let's just get that aside, just in case Grant Holt's listening. Some books are very good that we read. But anyway, you're also our second Sheffield Wednesday fan on the show in a row after the comedian Glenn Moore last week.
Oh, yeah.
Which I don't think we've done a Sheffield Wednesday book yet, have we?
No, I think we were looking some up and we couldn't find many.
Yeah, the reason why you can't find any is because we've been so bad for so long. It's a low standard player that no one is interested in reading their life story.
But Tom, would you like to write, you know, Benito Carbone's book or something like that? If they gave you the option, would you?
Did you ever see? I think it was when Carbone and Paolo Di Canio were both there, and there's. You know when a club photographer has to welcome a new signing and they sort of think, you know the picture I'm talking about, don't you?
Someone sent it to us about 2 days ago. The one
really?
With the frozen pizza.
It's a frozen pizza and they've gone, right, yeah, a couple of Italian lads, let's get a pizza. We haven't got a cooked pizza. Let's just take the cellophane wrapping off this floppy frozen pizza and get them to bite into it as if it's cooked.
That's the second time we've heard of a person eating a raw pizza on this podcast.
What was the other
this
one?
Series. Chris Kamara's mum. Weirdly.
Deliberately or a prank from Chris Kamara?
Apparently Chris Kamara was like, I bet you she ate that raw pizza. Bizarre.
Also, this is a deep cut, but I think in Gary Monk's book, he talks about Andy Tate trying to cook a pizza on a hob ring. So he does a whole pizza on like a hob ring on an oven and tries to cook it. That's right, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it is. Do you think Andy Tate was the club photographer for Sheffield Wednesday?
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, right. They were onto a winner here. Tom, if you had a dream subject for a book, who would it be? If, I mean, obviously you've written with some great people already, but if there's anyone you could write a book with, living or dead, who would it be?
Oh, James, you've gone in the big hard question there.
I know, there's no easing in on this show.
I'm going to prevaricate for a moment or two by saying that usually the thing that makes you excited about doing a book, it's not just the subject, but it's what you can do with it. So if you sit down with someone, they say they want to do a book, and they just want to do a bog standard autobiography, it can be a bit dull because so many have been written mm-hmm. that they're not hugely exciting to read. And as a result, they're not particularly exciting to write. So I think the excitement often comes from sitting down with someone and them being open to doing something different. So with the Jamie Redknapp one, which, when did we bring that one out? That came out in October last year.
Yeah.
So it was this time last year that I was finishing it off. The premise for that one was almost slightly strange in that we stop it when he scores his first goal for Liverpool at the age of 18. But the reason we like that is because it enabled us to do a proper deep dive into his unique footballing childhood. You know, the way that his dad would be taking him to school at the age of 13 and then just go, "You don't fancy school, do you? Not really, Dad, no. Want to come training with Bournemouth? Yes, I do." So we could do a proper deep dive, like 85,000 words on that. And then you can just get much more original with it and you can tell more stories. And because that one was at the cusp of football changing. So Jamie was coming into that Bournemouth first team at 16 and he's got Tony Pulis as a player alongside him. And Tony Pulis is basically there to break people's legs and is quite happy for people to know that. And he's teaching Jamie the dark arts. He's teaching him how to sort of go over the top of the ball. But at the same time, there's players like Ian Bishop, who was such a creative midfielder at West Ham, City, long hair, quite glamorous looking at that time. So there was these different influences on Jamie, and then he gets to Liverpool and it's still quite old school, but the world is changing. And some of the players are still going out on the smash after training, but a few have started picking up this strange food stuff called broccoli. eating it. So that was a really fun one to do. And then the one to Crouchy, because Crouchy had done a book, the superbly titled Walking Tall.
Yes.
Which came out in maybe 2007. So he's at Liverpool. Mm-hmm. It's after the World Cup, after he pulls Brent Sancho's dreadlocks for England against Trinidad and score that goal. So he wanted to do something different. And I wanted to do something different because he really got into that first book. And I think the publishers probably wanted something just quite straight down the line. But I thought, listen, the thing about Pete is his sense of humour. And the way that he looks at the world, like, so this whole premise that he is an elite footballer who's scored 20 odd goals for England, played at World Cups, but who looks at football the way that we do. He looks at football as a fan. So once you got that idea in your head, you think, well, how can we capture this? And you don't then want to do a chronological thing where you start with "I was born in and my parents did ... which is a pretty boring way of starting a book.
Yeah, so a lot if of you books you've read have done that.
They all do. They all do. So going in episodic and just going, do you know what? There's all this stuff that we know now about football. There's all this stuff that's talked about tactically, but there's the stuff that hasn't been talked about before. So what goes on the team bus? What goes on in team hotels? All that inside part of football. And then by making that book episodic around those things, you could just bring in the best stories without doing all the whole, when I was 12, you know, I scored 40 goals for my school team, et cetera, et cetera. It just liberated you. So that is a very, very long-winded way of saying that it's often the premise as much as the name, as much as the subject that is why you want to do a book.
That's
the way that you phrase that makes it sound like maybe there's some people that you turned down.
Tash, I have turned people down. But sometimes that's because, certainly when I was at the BBC, the books were, I was doing them in my spare time, and there was always a time balance thing. So you couldn't do anything that would get in the way of your day job, understandably. So sometimes a book would come along. So the Crouchy one, I was going to have a bit of a breather because I'd had a slightly crazy run of books where I'd done one for Geraint Thomas, and then I'd done a Chris Gayle book because I could not do a Chris Gayle book.
Of course.
So I'd done that one, and then I really needed a bit of a break because you're spending all your evenings typing and all your weekends typing, so you need to rebalance your life. But I always say with books, if my literary agent phones me up and tells me, would you be interested in doing this? For all the sort of the sensible and logical things that go on in your brain about, do I have the time? Is this story interesting? Et cetera, et cetera. Usually it's just a snap decision. It's like when you meet someone and you tend to know, don't you, sometimes within 10 seconds if you're going to get on with them. Ooh. And it was like that with the
We've
Crouchy
been chatting
one.
For 10 minutes. So yeah. You clearly made your mind up already on this.
So it was just, Davey said to me, would you be interested in a book with Peter Crouch? And my brain just did the calculations in about 5 seconds. And I just went, fuck yeah, I would, yeah. I would. I'm exhausted and my fingers have gone wonky from typing relentlessly for the past 2 years. But yes, I would like to do a book with Crouchy.
Amazing. That's
so
brilliant.
Wait, did the podcast come out of that, or was it?
Yeah. Wow, so the podcast came off the back of that. So the reason the podcast is as it is, so episodic, is because that's what worked with the book. So I was sitting down often actually in the Holiday Inn. Tash, you might know this Holiday Inn, Junction 15 of the M6.
Yes, I do. Yeah. I actually stayed there after my prom. That's how glamorous.
Did you? You'll be familiar with quite how glamorous it is then.
Oh, yeah.
The sound of the M6 rumbling by, the sound of the dual carriageway.
Why do service stations come up so often on this podcast?
Footballers are obsessed with having meetings in service stations.
Yeah, so Tom, this weird. Is rubbed off on you, clearly. Just hang out with the sports stars.
Well, the strange thing about it, because it's not far, as Tash will tell you, it's not far from the training ground, is it, Tash? So the Stoke players who don't live in the Stoke area would often overnight there. But then they're almost hiding in plain sight. So I would be sitting in the little restaurant bit, Tash, around the back of reception.
Oh, yeah.
Where Delicious. You would have had breakfast in the morning after your prom. Mm-hmm. And you'd see people walk past and see a man of 6'8" who looked exactly like Peter Crouch. And then they're sort of, you could see them glance over, and then they'd do a little mental sum, which was like, why would a millionaire footballer be staying in this? And you'd see them walk on. It was like, oh, that's so strange. He looks just like Peter Crouch, but clearly he wouldn't be staying here.
So hiding in plain sight. That's amazing.
Hiding in plain sight. So we'd sit there.
That's very hard for him.
It is, yeah.
Yeah.
He would just make me laugh in a way that we're all now familiar with from the podcast.
Sure.
My partner has got no interest in football whatsoever. She could not give less of a shit. But I was getting back from these sessions in the Holiday Inn at Junction 15, and I'd be playing her bits off my dictaphone, which would just be me and Pete laughing our heads off. And sometimes she just indulges, and sometimes she would laugh along as well. And that's when I thought, there could be something in this.
Yeah.
It might be more than a book.
Let's start this from scratch. So say... Yeah. David Dunn comes up to you and goes, Tom, any football... David Dunn's the first who I wrote...
Sorry, David. I laughed at David Dunn. Sorry, David.
The very idea.
David had a fine career.
Tom is not interested. He's got Benito coming up. So David Dunn comes up to you and goes, Tom, I want you to tell the story of David Dunn. Where do we start? What happens? What's the first thing you do? How do you go from David asking you this question to getting the book to print?
Yeah. Okay. So you'd think of your angle, what can we do that's different here? You'd have a chat with David, see if there was stuff you didn't know about him. You'd done a bit of research beforehand. You'd think, what could we do that's different about this? Is there a particular period we might want to dive into? Like, if we're talking about David Dunn, do we make this all about 1990s football? Mm-hmm. Is this like the insider guide to 90s football?
Okay.
And then you think about some of the players he'd played with at Blackburn, at Birmingham, and some of the managers, and try to think about...
I think this in-depth process might be why we've never had to slag one of your books off, because I don't think any book that we've ever read has gone into this.
Most people are like, what's the pun we can do with the name? Okay.
done
it the hard way. There we go. We're done.
Exactly. Well, maybe that's where I'm going wrong. I think the best pun I've heard is actually, it's a non-football one, it's a rugby one. So Lee Byrne, the former Wales fullback, see if you can guess the title of Lee Byrne's autobiography. I'm going to give you a little clue because I can see...
Burned once, burned twice.
It's a pun on a series of films, a successful series of
films. The Byrne Identity.
Is the right answer, James.
Yeah, very good.
Very good. I was going like, so, the Byrne Locker? Burn after reading?
Burn after reading would have been good, actually. Remember that?
You can call
one.
Yours Jack, that, Jack.
I will.
Yeah, true. That's... With an E.
Tom, are you interested in...
Let's talk, Jack.
You were trying to get to the bottom of David Dunn's angle.
David Dunn's angle. Yeah, no, you're absolutely right, Tash. You can do this in a totally different way, which is someone says to you, I'm going to give you X amount of pounds to write 80,000 words. And you just see it purely
as
a...
And we'll never proofread them. You just submit them and it goes to print.
Exactly. And you would be surprised, or maybe you wouldn't actually, with the books that you've read, how many footballers/managers never read their own books. have no interest in reading their own books.
They admit it as well.
Chris Kamara famously, I think, said, whose book we read, said, I'm not a big reader. I've never even read my own autobiography. So, and apparently that genuinely is true. He's doubled down a couple of times.
Exactly. So I think once you've decided what you're going to do, then it's a question of, you need to spend time together, and then you need to work out how you spend that time together. So, you know that strange thing where you often have great conversations with friends when you're driving. One of you's in the passenger seat, one of you's driving. And there's this strange thing about eye contact is meant to be everything with conversations. But sometimes the opposite's true, and you can sit in a car and have actually really great conversations just staring at the road ahead of you. So you have to work out with the person you're sitting down with what situation is going to get them most relaxed and most able to open up and remember stuff. So let's say with the Brownlee boys going way back, so that was the first book I ghosted. With those boys, I would go out on a long bike, because when they're on their bikes, they're totally relaxed. So I would go out on a long bike ride with them through the day. I was like 4 hours, them doing the hard work, me sitting on the wheels. You chew stuff over. And then cycling is a bit like driving, and you're just staring ahead, and it's almost like, it's quite meditative, I think. So we would have really good conversations doing that. With Chris Gayle, like, it can help if you're doing a deep dive into someone's childhood, and we did this with the Jamie Redknapp book as well, is you physically go back there. So with Chris Gayle, I went over to stay with him in Jamaica, and then we went back to the shack where he grew up, just this sort of piles of concrete breeze blocks with like a piece of corrugated iron as a roof. And you went back there and you just sat there and all the memories came back. So you talked and talked then, and you walked around the streets and you went to his old school.
Are you holding a dictaphone at this time, or are you just remembering stuff?
Usually dictaphone. Sometimes you're just making notes in your phone. The beauty of a dictaphone is you don't want anything to break the conversation.
Yeah.
So if you're going, hang on, Chris, just one second, you're frantically making shorthand notes into your iPhone.
Yeah.
So you try and get someone in a situation where the memories flow and they're relaxed. With Crouchy, what I would do is I would send him a little bit of homework. So I'd say, right, okay, the topic today is going to be managers. And I would send him on his phone a load of little notes or a little sort of jumping off points. And then when he was getting the train up to Stoke, because he would get the train up to Stoke on a Monday, stay at the Holiday Inn on the Monday night, go back Tuesday, he would make little notes on his phone. And then we would go through it, and you would just chew over little things like that. And then if you want to be really diligent, then you have a second pass at stuff sometimes. So you might write the first draft and then you realize that people are going to get more recollections of stuff as they read it. So you might read it with them, or you might literally print it off for them sometimes and then get them to scribble things in the margin and then go through them again. So you need like two or three passes at it. You might also, if their memory isn't great, or if you just want a deeper dive, you might talk to people around them. So you might talk obviously to parents for early stuff. Mates, old teammates. It's almost like doing a benign best man speech.
Okay, I see
all
that.
The stories that they can't quite remember will be a bit embarrassed to tell you. That's what
that's a job that I used to do sometimes, is write best man speech for people.
Really?
For wedding speeches for people. Yeah, it's honestly true. And the tips we give people who, when they don't necessarily want to buy the bespoke service, is, you know, get all your family and friends together and just get them to, recall some of the memories and stuff. Or like, if you're writing your best man speech, get their mum and dad involved, send them a message, see what's going on.
James, I feel like your whole life has been leading up to writing a football autobiography.
Yeah, I do feel like...
I think it's going that way, James. That way.
I really want to write Tim Sherwood's autobiography. I've said this before on the podcast.
Has he not done one?
Amazingly not, exactly. No. This is why I've got the name. It's called The Man Behind the Gilet. And I don't know if he knows nothing about it at the moment, but hopefully I'm quite happy to write it with or without Tim Sherwood's blessing. So I think that's
something I've offered to write Tom Pope's for free, and I've tweeted him and he's still not come back to me.
He's not come back.
What better is he doing?
Yeah, that's a very good question. Yeah. but we've got David Dunn. You're calling Nana Dunn. You're taking David back to wherever
all the Duns.
Yeah, getting the Duns on the phone.
And then once you start showing them, actually, this is really nice. This is a little stroll through your childhood, or this is a stroll through your happiest times as a sports person and your greatest moments as a footballer. Then they really start enjoying it. And then you're sitting down and you're watching old games with them and they're thinking, God, this is great. This is, it's a massive ego boost, really,
isn't it?
It's
like, this is your life.
It is, but you're in control of it, I suppose. That's the other thing about it, James. You are in control of it. So it's your version. It's not like someone else is telling your story for you. if there's stuff you've always wanted to say about someone, you can say it. If there's something you've always wanted to say in your defense or an explanation you want to give, this is where you can give it.
Yes. That's that hints towards nicely towards what we're going to bring up slightly later. But that is, that's really interesting around that, because we spoke to Jack. Do you remember when we spoke to Daniel Brigham, who was the writer of Grant Holt's book? And he described sitting with Grant Holt. I think Grant Holt used to go into a tiny room at Carrow Road somewhere together, and then he'd eat loads of crisps, he told us, all the way through the recording. But his book is generally very good.
Would you, from his physique?
No?
Oh, imagine transcribing that if he recorded it and it's just like...
Words ruined by sound of crisps being eaten.
But he said that it was a lot like therapy in many ways. Yeah. For Grant, he said, like, sitting there with him, you know, he'd just be sitting there with his idol Grant Holt, and sometimes Grant Holt would just, you know, start crying talking about his relationship with his father and stuff. And is that something you found a lot in books that I guess this going back to old memories and stuff hints towards that?
Yeah, there's a very it's a strange relationship really between ghost and subject, because it's super intense at times, yet it's finite. So it depends how long you have to write the book. You know, I've written some very fast books sometimes, like the Laura and Jason one had to be written ludicrously in 3 weeks after the Olympics. So that was 85,000 words. The conversation
done
the right
time,
which is why my fingers are twisted and bent backwards like an old witch's. But
that was your Olympics. Really.
That was my Olympics, yeah. It's a finite relationship, but it's very intense, because you are talking about a lot of things they might not have talked about with other people, or stuff they might not have thought about for a while. And often it is... some really sensitive topics about relationships with parents who may or may not still be alive. And yeah, I always have to say at the start, and this was particularly true when I was chief sports writer at the BBC, is that these conversations are between me and you only. These aren't going to appear in an article on the BBC Sport website or in a chat on Five Live. This is totally confidential between us two. Mm-hmm. And you know how you can't tell someone to trust you, that you have to actually prove that they can trust you. It takes a little bit of time, you know, sometimes with these relationships. You can't kiss their ass, because sports people are used to having their asses kissed. Mm-hmm. You just have to be just quite normal, I think. Okay. And then you do get those points. I mean, with Jamie's book, because a lot of it's about his family.
Yep.
And they are, the Redknapps are a very tight-knit family. And when we're talking about the car crash his dad had at the 1990 World Cup, where he almost died and his friend died, and he's in hospital on in Italy, and Jamie, who would have been 17 at that point, has to fly out to Italy with his brother and try and find his dad, and doesn't know whether his dad's dead or alive.
Oh, my gosh.
Then, you know, there are a lot of tears around there. So that, you build up... Yeah, it's strange, because you build up a bond, and you will always have that bond because you've shared that stuff with them, but then you'll get to the point where the reason for you spending time with them, which is the book, will pass. So it's unlike most other relationships, because if you form that sort of bond with someone, ordinarily you do stay in touch with them. But it's not like you sort of hang out with them as you would with a friend. Do you know what I mean? It's quite a strange thing. It's a privilege, really, because you're getting to meet some really fascinating people. And if like us, like you are obsessed with football and sport, you know, you do get this incredible view of what it's really like, and you get taken inside these worlds that you've only looked at from the outside before. It's a strange relationship, but if it goes well, it can be really special.
That's such a beautiful and profound answer that I feel so stupid asking my next question on the piece of paper. Grant Holt ate crisps. Did any of the people you did books with eat any funny snacks?
That is a great segue, James.
Thank you.
Oh my God.
Okay,
I said I didn't want to ask it.
Let me think what snacks. Okay, in reverse order of books that I've done. Jamie Redknapp loves sweets. He will always eat sweets in the car.
Ah.
Crouchy is an absolute soup fiend.
Soup?
He will take
a soup fiend.
Yeah, he'll take on a soup wherever
like
he can get one.
Like a cup of soup or a proper soup?
Proper soup if he can get one, yeah. I mean, he would have one from the Holiday Inn range.
Okay.
Range as if they've got five or six soups to choose from rather than just a
soup.
Love
the idea. He would go to Waitrose and be like, sorry, do you have the Holiday Inn range?
Looking for something from the Holiday Inn range. So
would he ever make his own soup?
Footballers don't tend to make their own food as a rule of thumb.
That's true. You're right.
That's a rule. That's,
there's a reason why Benito Carboni and Paolo Di Canio yeah. didn't make the pizza themselves. Exactly. That's true.
Exactly. Who else has eaten what? With Chris Gayle, there was quite a lot of Jamaican foods. We used to sit on his balcony
nice.
And have jerk fish and stuff like that and rice and peas, which was very, very nice. Who else has eaten food in the course of doing
I'm very glad you're giving this answer the weight it deserves. Like, thank you very much.
Cyclists, just thinking about cyclists, they either eat loads or nothing depending on the time of year,
right?
So if they're losing weight for a big race, they eat ludicrously little. They'll have just sip espressos and then have a small piece of steamed fish and spinach. It is like being exactly what it is. Yeah.
Are they very irritable though when you're asking them questions when they're not eating?
They're almost literally horizontal sometimes. So you just have to. Coffee is all important. They're so tired because they've done loads of training and they're really hungry. And you have to be very conscious when you order your food not to have like massive plate of fish and chips, like tomato ketchup all over it, just to make it awful for them.
You guys not going to have anything? Oh, this is great, this food.
Do you know any pudding? I might have two puddings and a soup. I might have a crouchy soup to start.
When you're doing these things and someone tells you something that's quite, that, I don't know, makes them look bad, as it were.
Yeah.
Is it your sort of, are you thinking, okay, let's not put that in because that'll make them look bad and this is the point of the book is to make them look good? Or are you sort of thinking, how do we change this so it's still honest or still relevant to the story?
Yeah, that is a good question. And this does pop up with most books. So I would generally say it's best to be honest, mm-hmm. but without giving it the full Donald Rumsfeld, it's possible to be honest in not entirely honest ways sometimes. So let's say, Jack, you had done something totally heinous, and I'm not suggesting for a moment you have.
This is a really, this podcast is going to be the end of me, isn't it?
I tell you what, an example we could use is, because there was one in one of the books you read. So we mentioned it earlier when we were chatting before the thing. Jermaine Pennant's mental. Jermaine Pennant almost brags about how he killed former Hollyoaks star Jennifer Metcalfe's cat with his dog. And it's horrible. It is generally the worst part of any book we've read. How would you have handled that?
Well, the first question would have been to Jermaine saying, do you want to talk about this in the book? The second one would probably have been, and I appreciate this won't necessarily work for this example, is this incident already publicly known about?
Right.
Because if the incident is out there and you don't mention it in your book, it's quite strange. Then your next approach is you can talk about something and sometimes you don't need to go into the great specific details. So let's say there was a night out where you, Jack, had disgraced yourself. Then you could just say...
Why do you keep on bringing this up?
I've heard the stories. I've seen the images. So you could say in your book, Jack, that you know you had this night out and you did things you regret. But you wouldn't mm-hmm. necessarily need to say that you had, with Jermaine Pennant, had killed the cat of a soap star. So that's the degree of honesty that you could find within it. You are saying...
He's not being honest at all, by the way, listeners, right now. There's no honesty in what he's saying right now.
But I think to make a serious point, you have to remind yourself that it's not your book.
Yeah.
So you are there to guide the person and the subject. And, you know, you're trying to bring... I often say, look, it's as if you were a great writer. That's how this has got to sound. So it can't sound like me when I write.
Yeah.
It can't. You're not a writer, so you don't have a written voice. It can't be an oral history, because otherwise that's just a transcription. So it's almost as if you were a really good writer, this is how you would sound, if that makes sense.
Interesting.
Yes.
So it's sort of their voices and their... And then I suppose it is, you're right, it's that question of, okay, do you want to talk about this and how much detail do you want to go into
with it? And it's your book, so it's ultimately your choice if we talk about it. Like sometimes you'll hear stuff, which sometimes amazing stories, and certainly the journalist in your head is going, fucking hell, what a tale that is. What? Did you? Oh my God. But you have to remind yourself that you aren't a journalist. You are writing their book. And if they don't want it in there, that's their book. But that
you can't just go offers and sell it to the Sun or something like that. I guess that
no.
would go, yeah.
You would be a very bad person. Yeah. So that goes back to what I was saying about getting buy-in from them as well, that you never want a subject to think that this is just something you are doing for yourself.
Of course.
They're doing it for them and you are there to help them make it as good as possible and make it really as good a book as it could be for them.
In like a few decades, though, when you're on your final resting bed.
Yeah, you think how many
you'll
decades?
Spill some of the beans.
However many decades
would
it will be.
Spill? Because those stories might be lost forever. You yeah. need to pass them on.
Will you come on the podcast then?
Oh, well, yeah, let's make another date.
Yeah.
Dash is effectively threatening you because that deathbed thing may be happening very soon if you're not careful.
Yeah.
And there'll be plenty more from Tom Fordyce after the break.
Well, it's a quiz, but this time it's a podcast.
Yes.
With me, Makita Oliver.
I was going to go with that at first, you know, I really was.
I love a quiz.
I'm nervous.
Aww. How many edges does a 20p have?
Oh my gosh.
Oh my God, I'm doing so badly.
We will quiz, we will chat, and then we will repeat. Forever. Just search Quiz Chat Repeat in your podcast app.
Welcome back to Football Book Club. Meet Tom Fordyce. You worked for Match as well, Tom. Is that right?
I did, yeah.
I'm guessing, what was this? Early noughties you worked at Match?
So I was massively lucky. So the editor of Match at the time, a guy called Chris Hunt, was really good because he had this thing about employing people who really had very little experience but had lots of ideas. So when I was in my final year at college, I got the chance to go and work. So this would have been the summer of 95 to go up and work with Match, which to me was absolutely blew my mind because they just casually say to you, oh, we've got this chance to go send someone to go training at Liverpool. Do you want to go? And you'd be like, what? Why could you tell me I can go training at Liverpool?
Yeah.
You know, you were used to doing these sort of summer jobs where you'd be earning like £3.10 an hour packing apples or something. And someone's going, you can go and train with Robbie Fowler and Jamie Redknapp. So I did that. And then when I was doing my 1 year journalism degree, I just used to get the call from Match if they wanted someone to go and do something. So I was down in Cardiff and I just, this is pre-mobile phones. You come back to your answer phone, your flat, and there'd be a message saying, can you get to Bolton tomorrow to the Reebok factory to interview Peter Schmeichel? So this just felt incredible to me that I could go and interview Peter Schmeichel. And this was an era, this was such a different era where you'd have a phone number for all the training grounds in the Premier League and there would be a payphone on the wall outside the dressing room. So you'd phone this thing and one of a big name footballer would answer the phone and you'd just go, can I speak to Ryan, please? And then you'd get this, Giggsy! Giggsy! And Ryan Giggs would come to the phone, and it's impossible to imagine such a situation now.
That's
but
great.
That's what would happen. Or you'd phone up and go, yeah, can I speak to Phil Babb? Babsy! Babsy! So that's how it began at Match.
When we did the Nevilles' book the other week, there were so many stories that were uniquely 90s-y, like Jordi Cruyff and Sir Alex getting dragged along to watch Spice World the movie and stuff like that. There must have been, and like we talked about these photos earlier with Carboni and stuff, there must have been some features and photo shoots you did at Match that you look back on and think, what was all that about?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, there were certain tropes that would reappear. So the We Go Round a Footballer's House double page spread, which you might be familiar with.
Yeah.
So, for example, you might go around to Robbie Elliott's house in Quayside. And they would always look the same because generally the footballer had no idea where anything was in the house. They don't, obviously, they were quite young. Mm-hmm. There'd usually be a lounge, which have a massive sofa in and a big telly and then a PlayStation. And then lots of empty rooms, but just nothing in
there. Yeah.
And then you'd go to the kitchen and the photographer would often want like, all right, show us, can you make a cup of tea, Robbie? And then they'd be like, well, I don't know where the cups are. And then it'd be, can you get a saucepan and just turn it towards you so we can't see there's nothing in it and pretend to be making something.
Oh, no.
I don't know where the saucepans are. So there were certain tropes like that. There were also times where you would just, Because it was all about the photos in Match and Shoot, you know, so that would almost be the basis of the interview. You'd try and find something from that player's life that was interesting. So, for example, the former Bolton goalkeeper, Keith Branigan, used to make his own guitars.
Wow.
So I remember a double page spread where Keith Branigan was showing you, this is one I've made the body for, and this is I've made the neck here, and then the next one would be like, I'm going to attach the neck to the body. So I think those are probably some of the most surreal ones.
Yeah, definitely.
Where doing things like making guitars.
Yeah.
Yeah, making guitars with Keith
Branigan.
Here's
a Fender I made earlier.
So again, it's like it's a lost era because that, you know, the way that Axis is restricted now to footballers, but
yeah.
you would do ridiculous things. There was a point where it started getting slightly harder and you had to go through the sportswear companies. So for example, you would go to Nike and you'd say, look, we will do a photo spread with Robbie Fowler in Nike gear if you get us half an hour with him. And then the resultant photo shoot would basically have Robbie Fowler in a Nike cap with a Nike polo shirt with the swoosh and the collar, in a Nike sweatshirt with like one Nike ball under his arm and then some Nike balls dangling off his fingers.
That's great.
So yeah, I've got very fond memories of that time. It was just, there were days where you would be traversing the country in a hire car, in a cheap hire car. You might be on your way to Manchester to talk to the Neville brothers, and then you might be going down to Southampton to see Jason Dodd. And then the next day you might be going to see Adiyak Mbaye in Norwich. And, you know, it felt like you were bestriding one of the great eras of British culture. You had your fingers on the pulse of the nation's heart. That's Neville, Dodd, Akinbaye, 3 days.
And just to be clear, can Robbie Elliott make a cup of tea?
That I saw. I mean,
example. That Robbie Elliott.
That's a genuine example. Yeah, wow. They would never know where anything was in the cupboard. So he was very nice, Robbie Elliott, but they were young lads.
Like this was a very 90s thing, because I used to read, you know, a lot of smash hits and Top of the Pops back in the 90s.
Yeah.
And they used to have a feature where they'd go round to a pop star's house and get them to cook something. And I really remember them going to Claire from Steps' house, and she didn't know how to make pasta. So they, you know, it's all of them. They're all the same brush.
Well, we used to borrow a lot of ideas from things like Smash Hits and Just 17, because we just thought football is pop music, isn't it? Football is pop music for
Spice Boys.
So we used to do all those things, all those little ideas like that. We used to just nick.
Oh, sorry, I rumbled you.
So Tom, as you know, we've read a lot of books on the show, some good, some less good, but we start to notice a pattern in them. And again, we cannot stress enough how these aren't your books that we're talking about. But as you can probably imagine, there's a template that appears in a lot of these books. There's a lot of themes that always crop up. So we started thinking, do we even need a real footballer to write an autobiography? Can we just make up our own footballer and write it ourselves? Yeah, you like that idea? That's good.
Yeah.
Good. I'm glad you're on your boat.
So there's a quote on board. The cover.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. Nice. Great idea, Shane, by the execution. So we've been toying with some ideas. Our footballer is called Andy Crabb, and that's all we've got. Interested?
What's the Crabb story?
Well, that's the thing. We kind of
era?
90s and noughties. We know that. Late 90s, early noughties. That's our favourite era. So we wanted to play
Premier League?
Definitely Premier League. Definitely Premier League. Kind of, I think Darren Huckabee is the level we're thinking. So, you know, on the fringes of the national team, not quite getting in, or maybe getting in there just about, playing for a few teams.
Yeah, somehow he played for England like in a friendly, and then managed to play for Ireland.
Exactly.
Because of history.
But anyway, we're not sure what he is yet, but we know that there's some life events that he has to tick off. So classic football autobiography things. He has to have a drunken night in a training camp abroad that gets messy. He has to have a mishap with a drug test. He has to recap the first moment he walked onto a pitch and a needlessly graphic injury in great detail. He has to be suspicious when a foreign manager comes in. He has to finally reveal the truth for an instant the press misreported. He has to get in a blazing row with a fan. He has to make an extravagant purchase he regrets. And, of course, he has to bump into Peter Reid at least once, as that happens in every book we've read.
Genuinely
but
does.
But then the rest is up to our listeners. The book's name, who did he play for, what did he win, who was his best mate, who was the player who made him want to be a footballer. What footballer does he have an irrational hatred for and he always slags off? So if anyone's listening and they want to send in some ideas for Andy Crabb, please let them know. And Tom, if you had any ideas of things that you want Andy Crabb to have done or him to have played for.
Well, what I would say with my ghostwriter's hat on, my invisible ghostwriter's hat on, would be to ask what his voice is going to be.
Okay.
Are we looking at someone who is scathingly honest? Is that going to be a review in quote marks on the cover? You know, Crabb scathingly honest. Is he going to play it purely for laughs? Is he going to take it to the gutter in the penance style?
I think
is he going to be reflective?
I think he has to be unbelievably honest and have no sense of humour.
That's the Andy Crabb way.
Incredibly earnest. Yeah.
Incredibly earnest.
But we also want to be entertaining for people. I think, to be honest...
It'll be entertaining, but not intentionally. Andy Crabb's not going to let anyone in on his jokes.
When we have enough ideas, though, Tom, will you be happy to write the first page for us?
It would be a pleasure. Oh. It would be an absolute pleasure. Is it going to be one of those books as well where Andy runs out of stories before the 80,000 word mark and is forced to pad out the book with a series of appendices along the lines of Crab's greatest 11 and...
Yeah,
he's had the 10 best dream service team. Stations in one.
Oh, yeah, that
really?
And that was one of the better books I read. We're so excited for you to tell the story, Tom. And if anyone has any ideas... Actually, I think we should let one. Let's say you play for Sheffield Wednesday at one point when they're in the Premier League, just for Tom, as an honour.
Yeah. Oh, well, that's so much. Thanks, guys.
No worries. That's fine. Well, thank you.
Was he
Andy
responsible
Crab.
For sending us down?
Yeah, he got you relegated. Oh, God.
He almost certainly sent you down.
Fucking crap.
If you have any ideas, if you have any ideas, message us on Twitter, Instagram. Let's write this book. Right, before you go, Tom, can we play a game of real book, fake book with you?
Yes, please.
Brilliant. So I'm going to name you some footballers' autobiographies. If you think it's real, say real. If you think it's one we just made up, just say fake. Make sense?
Yes. Yes, it does.
Perfect. That's good. So Paddy Kenny and Perry Groves got 6 in this, separately, not together. So you got that to beat. Let's go. Number one, Alan Hansen, tall, dark and handsome.
True. Real.
Is correct. That is a real...
What was I meant to say, true or real?
Real is...
You're supposed to say real, but you said true, so it's not going to count.
Mark off, I'm afraid. Number two, Des Walker, destined for greatness.
Fake.
Is correct. It is fake. As a Sheffield Wednesday fan, I guess you...
I know, I would have bought it.
That. Yeah, exactly. Number three, Steve Bold, No Country for Bold Men.
That's got to be fake because the film came out too late for him and I don't believe he would have read the original source material. So that's a fake.
You've seen through it. You've seen through it.
Imagine if he watched No Country for Old Men and then was like, I can write my autobiography.
Just give me an idea.
Number four, Peter Crouch, How to Be a Footballer.
Do I even need to say?
You don't. You wrote that, Tom?
Yes.
There we go.
I helped write it.
Of course.
Helped write it.
Is correct. That's real. Number five, Neil Lennon, Man and Boy. Boy spelt with an H.
Yeah, that's got to be real.
It is real.
It's an unbelievable performance.
It's too clever for me to think up. It's too clever for me to think it up. Number six, Andy Reid's Marvellous Adventures in Sunderland.
Hang on. Marvellous Adventures in Sunderland.
Andy Reid's Marvellous Adventures in Sunderland.
Well, Andy Reid's a bit slightly differently wired. He's quite funny. I mean, it's quite a specific part of his career. He's decided to save the Forest and the Spurs bit for another time.
There wasn't much of Spurs. So as a Spurs fan, I can... Sadly, there wasn't too much for him to write about there.
I'm going to say they've looked at the support of Sunderland and thought that's a decent Christmas seller in the Wearside area. I'm going to say that's real.
You've overthought it. You've overthought it, Tom, I'm afraid. That is Andy Reid's Marvellous Adventures in Sunderland does not exist, I'm afraid.
It should.
Carlton Palmer, it is what it is.
I think Carlton would have done a book, but he would have had a better title than that.
It is quite downbeat as a title, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, are you familiar with the song that they used to sing at Wednesday about Carlton Palmer?
No, what was it?
All I say is that it rhymed his surname with smoking marijuana. He didn't like it. I'm gonna say that would have been a better title for the book, so I'm going to say this one is... I'm not sure. I'm going to say it's fake.
It's real. Carl Palmer's written that. I know.
It is what it is.
Yeah. Can't say it
it's got to be Carlton. If it's that, you just associate that phrase with Carlton, don't you?
Tom, yeah, that's true. Tom, you've got to go write his next one now and try and make up for that last one.
Yes.
Number eight, Jan Mulby. Mulby Kick. Mulby Kick. I almost couldn't
Mulby
say...
Kick. What does it even mean?
Moby Dick, I think, was meant to be a pun. Oh.
Unbelievable.
Really, that one came across really well. Fake is the correct answer, unsurprisingly.
Mulby Kick.
Mulby Kick.
Hey, oh, I get it.
Blame James. He sent it in. James sent me that. Throw him under the bridge. Number nine, Nathaniel Klein, A Brief History of Klein.
If only. I wish that was real, but it's fake, isn't it?
It is fake. You're correct. And finally, Tom Fordyce, My Greatest Football Team Ever.
That's a real book.
It's a real book. Available now, RRP, £7.99.
Yeah, and I should point out, it's not my greatest fit, it's the reader's greatest football team ever. They get to select a team, a dream team from the greatest players in history.
Ah, there we go. Mm. Well, it's available now, as you mentioned. You got 8. That's really good, Tom. You smashed
I'll take
it.
That.
You're way above Paddy Kenny and Perry Groves. And Paddy was jubilant when he got 6. So, like, really was. He was so over the top.
Have that former Sheffield United and Leeds goalkeeper.
Yeah.
Let's start a rivalry. Yeah. Fordyce versus Kenny. Let's go.
Yeah, he's already got enough hatred for Neil Redfern, I think. So, yeah. But thank you so much, Tom, for joining us today. You were absolutely brilliant. Thank you so much for giving us the insight and for letting us know that you're going to write the book with us. When Andy Crabb's got more of a story, you'll come back on, right?
Oh, for sure.
Brilliant.
Yeah, without any doubt. Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.
What a great guest. He was brilliant.
Such a good guest. So good.
So really nice.
Insightful, yep. Intelligent, yep. Good looking.
Bastard.
Sounds like an Amazon review. Sounds like you're giving Tom Fordyce an Amazon review. Would buy again.
Would buy again. Five stars.
Such a nice man. And also, yeah. I feel like we could actually write a book now.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That's exciting. He's going to write the beginning of it. He's going to write the beginning of the book.
I really wonder about that.
I love how you dropped it in on a live recording because he couldn't exactly say no, could he?
I felt like he was definitely looking at the time being like, yeah, just say yes, Neil. He'll let you go.
Yep.
I've got to pick the kids up from school. Come on, yeah, whatever
sure,
you want.
Sure. 500 pages by your desk. Yeah, don't worry.
He's already blocked my number, so...
it's a good start.
Well, seconds if you think how fast he wrote that Kenny book, then he'll be able to write the first chapter for us in no time.
Yeah, that's true.
Especially, exactly.
And the Ks exist.
Finger out, Tom.
Right, next week on the show, we'll be heading a little bit back to normality and reading an actual book. What kind of? We're reading Steve Bruce's 1994 autobiography, Heading for Victory. And you're in for a treat. You are in for a treat. It's going to be quite the episode, I think. We've started reading it and, oh my. If you've read that or any of the books so far, message us on Twitter, @FootyBookClub, Instagram, @FootyBookClub, or on Facebook. Also, importantly, if you have anything you want to contribute to the Andy Crabb story, message us anything. Who he played for, what you want to see him do, where you want to see him. Or just Tom Fordyce fan fiction. Anything you want to write in?
Yeah.
send it over. Let's
make
this
happen. Andy Crabb got into a fight with Tom Fordyce.
Yeah, let's make this happen. But for now, say goodbye, Jack and Tash.
Goodbye, Jack and Tash. Bye.
Until next week, we'll see you then. Thanks for listening to Football Book Club. It featured James Bug, Tom Fordyce, Jack Bernhardt, and Natasha Daniels. It was created by James Bug, and it was a Crowd Network production. The theme music, Hills Behind, is the work of Silent Partner and is used on a Creative Commons 4.0 license. We'll be back with more next week when we read Steve Bruce's Heading for Victory. In the meantime, if you've enjoyed the show, please give us a nice rating on the app if you've got it open in front of you. We can't wait to see you next week. Bye-bye.